Today, we will discuss the seven factors of enlightenment. Within the 37 factors of enlightenment, there are seven main factors of enlightenment called Satta Bhujanga, as taught by the Buddha, and they are, first, enlightenment factor, the main one is Sati, or mindfulness. That's why this enlightenment factor or sati or mindfulness is the most important. This one is the silent inner awareness before the knowing. Always remember that. It's just that nature, which is just the awareness nature before the knowing. The moment you know means you have to perceive something through memory. And that is the aggregate of mind. That is the mundane mind. So the awareness before the knowing is sati. Always remember that. That's why when you are aware, it's just the awareness and the phenomenon move as one. Or there is a spacious awareness without the center. So awareness can only do these two types of things. It is not samadhi, it's not something that can perceive, can give rise to thinking and all those things. But from that nature, everything arises that is spiritual. But the awareness nature has nothing to do with the mundane mind, the thinking mind. That one is dependent originating. This nature is the unconditioned. It has nothing inside there. But you need this nature to arise consciousness, to be conscious of things. That's why the first thing that arises from that nature is the pure awareness, is just the awareness nature. Then from there, everything comes to be. So sati, the first enlightenment factor, is actually your silent inner awareness before the knowing. Silent means no thinking, no chattering, no verbalization, no thought process. Silent, without thought. So sati is the first factor of enlightenment, and it's also one of the spiritual faculties. For sati is life, and without sati, there is no heedfulness, hence no life. What we are referring to here is the spiritual life, because the heedless are as if dead. So if you are heedless, you are as if dead, means spiritually you are dead. But you still exist. You still have the mundane life. But spiritual life, you don't have. That's why here the Buddha means heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. That word as if means spiritually you are dead. You don't stand a chance to become enlightened, to develop spiritual understanding. So to develop spiritual understanding, you must have heedfulness. To develop the enlightenment, you must start with heedfulness. So heedfulness is very important. And to be heedful, like I explained, Dhammapada verse 23 explained very clearly what heedfulness is. Heedfulness has two components, ever mindful and constantly meditative. So to be ever mindful, we have to train our mind to develop mindfulness first. That's why we need to be aware. The moment you are without thought, you are already aware. You don't have to try to be aware. Always remember. So awareness is an understanding. The moment you are without thought, you are already aware, naturally aware. No need to try. That trying is always by the thought. So thought, when it is active, you cannot be aware. Your awareness is before the knowing, before the thinking, before the thought arising. So this understanding is very important. So to be aware is the first training. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. that awareness is mindfulness. So first is to develop the training of the mind to be aware, to be mindful, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then after that, use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is basically the Noble Eightfold Path, or the Fourth Noble Truth. Because under the Fourth Noble Truth, the Buddha said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So the purpose of us developing the meditation is to develop the wisdom, the awakening, leading to the enlightenment, so that you are free from all suffering. So that is the reason why Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So whatever meditation you are taught or develop, if it doesn't bring you back to the training of the Noble Eightfold Path, then that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So this is a very easy and important check. You must constantly check yourself. Okay, then we move on. I will read on. Sati, or mindfulness, is the first enlightenment factor, and it is one of the five spiritual faculties. The third spiritual faculty. We have Sada, Virya, then Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, the five spiritual faculty. So Sati is the third one, but it's the first of the seven factors of enlightenment, the main one. For Sati is life, and without Sati, there is no heedfulness, hence no life, because the heedless are as if dead, spiritually dead. Also without Sati, you cannot develop the stability of mindfulness to be heedful, or the silent mind in pure awareness to investigate the Dhamma and to see the mental intention behind all your actions, speech, and thought processes clearly. As I said, Sati is very important. Without Sati, there is no heedfulness. Without Sati, you are as if blind. You cannot see a lot of things. Then you need Sati to be aware of many, many things. And this Sati has to be very stable so that it has clarity. It is just aware. And because it's aware, it's sensitive. It can see things as they are. It can see many things that the thinking mind cannot see. That the thinking mind is thought itself. And thought, being egoic, will tend to distract you, make you emotional, fearful, worried, excited, anxiety, insecurity. So all these are the mind state of the egoic mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, especially delusion, sakayaditi, self-delusion. Then we move on to the second enlightenment factor, which is Dhamma Vichaya, or Dhamma Investigation. So Dhamma Vichaya is the second factor of enlightenment. Only with Sati is there the ability to investigate the Dhamma with the silent mind. When the Dhamma stands up to investigation, the faith or Sada in the Buddha and his teaching will be strengthened, thereby giving rise to the Virya, the spiritual zeal. When you investigate into all the Dhamma, essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us, like Dhammapada verse 1, verse 2, verse 183, verse 21, 22, 23, and all the various essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us, then if you stand up to investigation, then you will have a lot of faith in the Buddha and his teaching. And this faith is the one that will drive you to cultivate his teaching. That's how Virya come to be. That spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity arises through that faith after Dhamma investigation. So the cultivation process is very simple. Train your mind to be mindful, stabilize it to be ever mindful, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And the whole of the process of Noble Eightfold Path also involve contemplation, reflection, inquiry. So these are all part of Dhamma investigation. When you reflect, contemplate, and you inquire, you are actually investigating into the Buddha's teaching. That you inquire, why did the Buddha say that? How can I understand it? How can I develop the understanding of it? So all this inquiry is leading to investigation. Yeah. So inquiry and investigation, they are linked. So the second turning involves a lot of Dhamma investigation each day. Because when you reflect, contemplate, and inquire, you will understand the essential Dhamma more deeply. That's how you stabilize your first turning wisdom. After you have heard the Buddha spoke, the teaching, then there is a certain type of understanding. We call it Sutta-maya-panya, or wisdom born of listening to the Sutta. Then in order to stabilize this understanding, we need to constantly reflect and contemplate on all this essential Dhamma. Then we have to inquire and investigate into it so that it stand up to investigation, so that our understanding can stabilize. And that's how sati will lead you to the Dhamma investigation. Then from there, the faith will arise. And because of the faith, it will drive you to cultivate. And that virya is the third enlightenment factor. So, and third enlightenment factor is virya, or the spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity, or energy. Spiritual zeal is Z-E-A-L, the spiritual tenacity to cultivate, to go this way. Then you see the importance of this teaching, that faith drives you, that Dhamma investigation gives you the faith, because when you investigate, it is the truth. It stand up to investigation. That's how your spiritual faculty of Siddha leading to virya come to be. So third spiritual faculty is virya. When there is virya, you will cultivate. Where this very strong spiritual driving force or spiritual tenacity will drive you to cultivate sincerely, diligently. And the faith is the more motivating factor. The faith that leads to the virya drives you to cultivate sincerely and diligently. This is how your spiritual faculty is strengthened. Then sati will definitely arise. Because when the sadha and the virya is there, you know and see the importance of this teaching. That's why you will go all out to cultivate it. Just like what I did in the year 1986. In fact, in the year 1971, after I came across the Four Noble Truths, deep inside my nature, I knew this is it, no more turning back. That's why I tell myself, no need to search anymore. Nobody can do that unless he's the real Samasambuddha. So this spiritual zeal, tenacity to go this way, is a very powerful driving force, and it arises because of the understanding and the faith behind. So spiritual faculty are very important is because of this. Sadha virya leading to sati. Then after virya will condition the cultivation to be very stable, because that virya will drive you to cultivate sati, and your sati will stabilize. When your sati stabilize or arise, you will experience piti. Piti is a spiritual joy, a spiritual calmness, and this is the fourth enlightenment factor. So when there is virya, the natural consequence is sati will stabilize, and you will experience piti, the fourth enlightenment factor. And this spiritual joy and spiritual calmness is very calming, very wholesome, and it's an enlightenment factor, because that joy, that calmness, that peacefulness within is the beginning of meditative experience. You start to experience the type of mind that is so calm, so pitiful, so full of pity, a mind that is full of spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. And this one is before the sukhang. Sukhang is blissfulness of mind, and that is not enlightenment factor. And that one, meditator can attach and cling. Pity, sometimes also they attach and they cling. When they look forward to the experience, then they stop there. They do not proceed from there. That's how it becomes a mental pity is not mental. Defilement of insight. Although you progress very well, you develop pity, but you attach. If you can't defilement of insight, that's why you get trapped. That's the reason why I say don't be complacent. Don't be trapped by the defilement of insight. Means you must develop clear comprehension of non-delusion so that you are not deluded by it. So this pity and sukhang, they will arise because these are my state born of continuous mindfulness, calmness of mind. When mindfulness is there, pity will arise very fast. That's how you can feel it, very blissful, very calm, a lot of joy. Especially the first few times when you experience them as a meditator. You will like to meditate. You will look forward to experience them more and more. But pity is actually the beginning of a true meditative mind. So you need to relax into it. Relax into whatever mind state that arises. Then the pity will transform and become more refined. Then you will experience sukhang. Sukhang is actually a more refined type of calmness. Then the mind becomes so calm, so blissful, really blissful. I don't know how to really describe the experience to you, but those who have gone through, they will know it's so blissful. Sometimes it's so blissful until that bliss is so like tingling inside you, or like that. It's really blissful. They call it heavenly bliss. It really is very blissful. That type of bliss, I cannot use word to describe to you. You have to experience it. During the early day, my meditative experience actually went through a lot of this. Especially in the year when I was in the university, 1975-76. At that time, the condition arise. And I, for the first time, went into that time of meditative state. The first day I reached the university, that night, midnight, I meditate. Then I was there sitting for 4 hours without realizing it. By the time I came out, I looked at my watch. It was already 4 a.m. But I was not tired. My mind was full of energy, blissfulness, peacefulness, calmness, stillness. And that mind is so beautiful. Those mind state follow me for the next 4 or 5 days. Throughout the day, that pity, that sukhang, that joy, it was always with me because I went into that formless line, infinite space. Then when I withdraw and came out, I thought it was only half an hour. But when I look at my watch, it was already 4 a.m. I was sitting there for 4 hours. And that was the first time I meditated. I don't know what meditation is. After listening to one of the talk by our late Chief Reverend K.C. Damananda, he pointed towards the forehead and he said, look inside your mind. So that time I didn't know. I thought my mind was at my forehead, at the brain there. So I looked inside. Then everything just happened. Then I was able to concentrate and focus because When I was studying, I'm a science student. I like maths, I like science subject, and I can really concentrate very well. I can fix my mind on that thing that I study. My mind will not run, will not wander. That's why I was able to like develop the mind to be what it is. Whatever I want to know, I'm interested in, it will stay there. It will not run. Then I looked inside. I couldn't see anything. Then all of a sudden, there was a bright spot. So I got nothing to do with that bright spot. I focus on it. But before that, I was doing anapanasati without knowing it. My breathing naturally come. My mindfulness naturally come. Then I went into all those piti, sukha, everything, without knowing that this is the meditative training, but it must be for my path. Then after that, towards the end, my mind become very quiet, very still, like there is no mind. Then I can recall the late chief reverend case report. He said, look inside. So I was so calm, so still. Then I checked. There was nothing. Then suddenly I saw this bright spot. That's why I focused on it. Of course, no sound. Then I give it a push. That mind went into another realm. It's like that mind travel out into infinite space. Infinite space. Then that was a totally different experience. Then after that, after a while, I release it out and come up because I say enough. First time, enough. I don't know what this thing is all about. Then after I came out, I felt so good. My mind like fresh, the whole body like very fresh, clarity, calm, peaceful, blissful, full of pity and all those things. Then after that, I came out, I looked at the watch. To me, I thought it was only half an hour. Well, all those things happened like for a while only, not long. But when I looked at the watch, it was already 4 a.m. So that 4 hour was actually relative. Because when you are in that mind state, time like moves very slowly, very slowly. So that short moment inside there, without thought, when you come up, it's already 4 hours. Then I thought that was meditation. Then I continuously do the meditation during my first year, second year, and I later continue on the third year and final year. Yes. As a student, we have a lot of time to meditate, and especially in the university. So that time, my anapanasati was very strong. Until later, I came out to work. I told you all before. Then I didn't meditate so often because that time I started to go into the career line. Then I realized after working for a while, when I start to have my salary, when I start to touch money, then I realized there is this ambition inside there. I want to be successful in my career and want to like go for further study, do master, do law and all those things to complement my career as a civil engineer. Then I realized, hey, this is craving. This is the Monday mind driving me. Then I realized something is not right. Because last time when I was in the university, when I meditated, my heart there, it was so still, the energy, the calmness and the stillness was so still, I can like be in that state throughout the day. Then when I came out of the work, when I don't meditate so often, then I realized there is movement inside. That's how I came to know there is still craving, there is still movement, there is still the mind active, having a lot of idea and all those things. So then I start to reflect and contemplate until the year 1986, 87, when I started my full-time cultivation, when I met my teachers, Master Shen Hua and Ajahn Yantra also, then I realized what I have been doing is actually samatha. Even though I go into anapanasati, but I developed the absorption. I went into apana samadhi instead of stopping at upachara samadhi. So that was how I reversed my cultivation after I met Ajahn Yantra. He told me the highest meditation is just the way. Every action, every movement in the present moment. Then I realized this type of meditation I have yet to do. Then I checked. I was hardly aware throughout the day unless I hold on to my anapanasati. Then I realized that is not right. Then I recall during the university when my heart became so still because of energy, that's why I start to understand it's a conditioned state. It's not a free mind. Then later on when I came out to work, when I get involved with career and all that, then I realized the mundane mind has a lot of idea about career, about success, about getting wealthy, financial freedom and everything. Then the awareness inside suddenly trigger out the understanding. Means this is still craving, desire. You have not rooted out the ignorance. The anusaya are still there. Then I recall what the Buddha said. The clear water appear clear, but the sediment still down there. But when there is condition, you stir it, the sediment will float again. Means they are all suppressed. And they are all suppressed. So through the understanding, when Ajahn Yantra told me the highest meditation, then only I realized it's the daily mindfulness. Because it meshed with the Kaya Nupassana, third category of cultivation of the Satipatthana Sutta. So during that time, I already sensed that mindfulness of the four postures and the Satipatthana is very important. But I didn't know that it was the daily mindfulness until I met Ajahn Yantra. That's why he was the one who told me that. Then I reversed my cultivation. I released out my anapanasati. All of the absorption, the stillness, everything, I released it out. Then I went into daily mindfulness. That's how I came to understand the whole cultivation after that. Then my anapanasati naturally didn't go into absorption. It became very quiet, very still until my mind enters deep. Then I came out, developed the daily mindfulness. And that's how it stabilized. Then also Xuan Hua taught me the bowing and all those things when I took refuge. So that one also helped. So together with the guidance from Ajahn Yantra, especially on the contemplation, which I shared with you all last Thursday, the advice from my teacher Ajahn Yantra. He said we choose contemplate until very, very clear. He told me no less than 6 times. So all these are the conditions that fall into place that lead my nature to the understanding. And finally, from my past, I was able to develop them and develop the understanding also. That's why after that, I didn't go to Brickfield anymore. After that 1989, when I developed the complete understanding, I just let things be. Then 15 years later, only Yun Chan came and requested me to come out to share 2004. Then the rest is history. So we move on. After PT, the fourth enlightenment factor, which is spiritual joy and spiritual calmness, you must relax into it. Don't go into it and develop the apana samadhi, the excess concentration. That one, if you do one partners, it becomes energy field. If you do continuous mindfulness, it becomes absorption, also a type of energy field. But both are thought-based condition state. Even though the absorption will come from continuous mindfulness, that there is still a clarity or awareness inside. But it is apana samadhi, over concentrated. That's why that one you cannot test yourself. It is not a free mind. So all your mental hindrance, your evil roots, they are being suppressed. They cannot surface because of the energy. So when you are in the absorption state or continuous mindfulness, it's like you are enlightened. Even those who did the jhana, when they reach the fourth jhana, it's like they are enlightened. Because all the defilement, all suppressed, cannot arise, cannot surface. But as they grow old, when their body become weaker, they cannot develop that type of energy to focus and concentrate and maintain that jhana experience or absorption. And then they start to experience deterioration in their meditation. Then they start to experience problem. Then they start to have doubt. Then they realize, without the wisdom, the penetrative awakening, the defilements are still there, not rooted out yet. Especially the latent tendency under Saya. Then later on, it becomes very potent, like asava. It starts to reach the surface. Then it's like asava release out. Anusaya is still the latent tendency inside, hasn't come out yet. So they call it anusaya. There's a latent tendency. No condition, nothing happened. Eckhart Tolle call it the pain body. If nobody disturb you, the pain body won't be activated. He used the word dormant. So all these are referring to the same thing. Because instead of calling it the pain body, if you develop the meditation, then you will know. These are all mind state defilements, latent tendency that are suppressed because of your calmness, your energy field, your metta. Then that time is like you cannot get angry. You can have a lot of joy and understand many things and a lot of metta. So during that time when I was in the university, my mind was full of metta, full of loving kindness, and that joy was very strong. But later on when I came out to work, I realized it's a conditioned state. You cannot stay in that state because that is not the real enlightenment mind. The real one is daily mindfulness, and it has to be a free mind, where all the five mental hindrances and the latent tendency or anusaya, they are not suppressed. They are not helped by a conditioned mind. So all this, as you cultivate, you understand. And because it's a free mind, it will surface. Then you have to handle it through an understanding. Without wisdom, you cannot deal. That's the reason why yoniso manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense experience, is very important. So the first, second, and third turning wisdom is very important. Without wisdom, you cannot free your mind. Your mind will react or stir. The habitual tendency, latent tendency, all will surface. The mental hindrance all will be there. Yes, you lack the spiritual faculties. And without the spiritual faculty, your mind state cannot be in the state of meditation, means meditative state of inner awareness, inner peace, and inner calmness, to develop the meditation, to develop the awakening, the understanding, and the insight into phenomena, to awaken to the three universal characteristics. So all this, you will start to develop the understanding. Then if you know how to relax when you experience piti and sukha, then it will become more and more refined. Then even your anapanasati or whatever object of meditation you use, they will become more and more quiet, more and more quiet, more and more subtle, like subtle breathing, then until no more breathing. It's like your breathing stop. Okay? Then only you can experience your tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, silent mind. That is positive. That is your true mind. So when your mind develops paucity, that is the fifth enlightenment factor. So after you are able to relax into piti, sukang and all those mind state, then let it settle down and you're very quiet, then paucity will arise. So paucity is tranquility of mind and the stillness of mind is the fifth enlightenment factor. And this is the silent mind in sati, or the mind that has entered sati. Once you have this mind developed, when you come out of it, your mindfulness will be there. Your mind has entered sati. Then after that, whatever you do, you are aware. Means every moment of seeing is in sati. Every moment of hearing is in sati. Every moment of smell, taste, tactile, and thought process is all in sati. Then every movement, whether physical, mental, or nature's movement, you can see them. Your mindfulness is with them. That's why it's called specific phenomenal awareness. Yeah. If it's physical movement, physical activity, then we call it kayana upasana. If it's mental, it can be feeling, vedana nupasana or citta nupasana. You can see that. If it's nature, then it's dhamma nupasana. So all these four foundations, when your mind has entered sati, that's why the fifth enlightenment factor is very important. Once you develop that, your daily mindfulness will arise. It will start to stabilize. Then when your daily mindfulness arises, sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension can be developed. The step 5 of Avijja Sutta. Yeah. But to develop step 5, you must develop step 4. Step 4 is the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. So initial wisdom is through constantly listening to the Dhamma, then reflect, contemplate, and inquire. First, second turning wisdom, followed by some form of meditative training, the third turning. But initial wisdom is mainly first and second turning. Then later on, as you meditate, the third turning also will strengthen the initial wisdom until it becomes panya. So this fifth enlightenment factor is most important. Once this is developed, you will progress very fast. The real meditation starts. A lot of things you never see before, you start to see. You start to understand yourself, your own form and mind very clearly. You start to see all the subtle greed, subtle defilement, subtle delusion. All the sensitivity of mind starts to surface. Then cultivation of noble evil power becomes very simple, very easy. Because that mind that is very stable in its daily mindfulness and have clear comprehension is very different. That is a meditative mind that has transformed. That one can insight into phenomena, can awaken, can develop a lot of understanding. Things that you never see before. Well, last time, your mundane mind is too active. Your nature awareness is being clouded by the mundane mind. The thought process, the sankara activity, the emotion, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, your proliferation of thought. Your phobia, your fear, your insecurity. So all this, you will start to understand, you will start to see when you develop paucity. Paucity, the fifth enlightenment factor, will lead you to the daily mindfulness, sati, sampajana, daily mindfulness and clear comprehension. So once you have the fifth enlightenment factor developed, the initial wisdom together with the stability of mindfulness will enable your mind to develop samadhi. Samadhi, the sixth enlightenment factor, is like very easy. The moment you're silent, don't do anything, no need to be in the sitting posture or lying down posture, even standing. The mind has that stability. Yes, samadhi is not concentration. No. Samadhi is the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind. It's a free mind, not in a conditioned state, but it is collected and unwavering because it does not stir anymore. So that mind has stability. Then at the moment of sense experience, when you hear something, smell something, taste something, see something, hear something, or think of something, your mind will not stir or react to sense experience. But it is collected and unwavering. Then your memory, your conditioning, your views, your opinion will not come in and disturb you. Because of that samadhi, it can allow you to see things as they are. Then you start to understand the reality. You start to understand what the Buddha meant by seeing things as they are. Because before the perception come in, before the conditioning, the views and the opinion and the conditioned mind condition you to react and stir, you straight away develop the understanding that the mundane mind, before the understanding, do all those type of nonsense. That is heedless living. Then once the samadhi is there, it doesn't waver like before. It does not stir like before. Then it can see clearly that if I don't allow this mundane mind through its delusion to do all this, then I can see things as they are. Then you can insight into phenomena. You can awaken to the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, non-self and empty nature. Then you will start to see that the characteristic of nature is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? No, for one who sees, they always see. That is, you need samadhi. You need stability of mindfulness. You need the initial wisdom. So with all this, your mind transforms. Then sati, pasati, and samadhi will enable you to see things as they are, and you will awaken. That's how you develop the awakening, the insight, the third turning wisdom, bhavana maya panya. And that one is very penetrating. When you develop that one, the wisdom will surface. The penetrating wisdom will surface. And then the last enlightenment factor, which is upeka, or equanimity of all mental formation or mind state, born of wisdom, is the last of the seven factors of enlightenment. And it will arise once sati and samadhi have stabilized to enable one to see things as they are, leading to all the wisdom or panya, which is also the last of the five spiritual faculties. Your spiritual faculties, sada, virya, sati, samadhi, lead to panya, the last one. So that's how the seven factors of enlightenment comes to be. And with this explanation, I think it's easy for you all to develop the meditation and the understanding. Then the next important understanding that will surface after you have developed the seven factors of enlightenment and you will awaken is, you will come to understand this karmically conditioned five aggregate of form and mind, or the segmented human being. It's like we are born as human. So we call this segment of life. Like my segment is this brother Theo that you all call. For you all, you have your own segmented life. Like Jayanta, Ananda, even Parmasuri or whoever. So understanding this will be automatic once you awaken. The karmically conditioned five aggregate of form and mind, or this segmented human being, which you all call brother Theo, is not me, but just only a tool and a vehicle for my nature to come to this existential world and for me to make use of, to live life and experience life to the fullest, etc. This form of physical body of mind is similar to the functional body of Lord Buddha called the Nimanakaya, that performs the function of the Buddha 2,500 over years ago. For me, it's perform the function of my nature, okay? When he became enlightened underneath the Bodhi tree, his spiritual nature of perfection body called the Sambhogaya Kaya came back to him. And then they combined to make him the Sammasambuddha. We are arising the third transformation body called Dhammakaya that enables him to speak and proclaim the Dhamma or teach the Dhamma. That's how he became a Sammasambuddha. They call it the Dhammakaya, the Dhamma body. So spiritually, they will explain the Trikaya, the three body of a cultivator. Not necessarily a Sammasambuddha, but the Sammasambuddha one is special because the Sammasambuddha one has perfected the spiritual body. The Sambhogaya Kaya, he has perfected it. So the Nimana Kaya is the physical body, the segmented life that he comes. That one, every one of us have. But the Sambhogaya Kaya, not necessarily everybody has reached the perfection. Like my Sambhogaya Kaya is the cultivation and the perfection that my nature has developed. Yours also, maybe to a certain extent, I don't know, have the cultivation of whatever that you have cultivated. So this Sambhogaya Kaya can vary. If you are not a Sammasambuddha, it's not perfected yet. Yeah. But if you are Sammasambuddha, it's perfected. That's why it will come in and combine with that Nimana Kaya, the physical body, and transform him into a Sammasambuddha that has the third transformation body called a Dhamma body or Dhamma Kaya. Kaya is body, Dhamma Kaya is Dhamma body. So for my case, it's my spiritual nature combined with this functional body in the Manakaya. That's why after 1989, he can share the teaching with the world. So this functional body together with the spiritual nature that my nature has developed but haven't perfected, but good enough because it has that understanding. This will transform my physical body, Nibbanakaya, the form of mind, into a Dhamma body. And this Dhamma body can share the Dhamma, teach the Dhamma, except it's not a Sammasambuddha. So this is the understanding that the individual cultivator will develop the understanding, and they will know what this thing is. They are no longer deluded. That's why I say this segmented form of mind is not me, but it's related to my karmic nature. Karmically conditional for me to come to this world, conditional, existential, to live life, to cultivate, to experience life to the fullest, to do whatever it has to do through its vows, its understanding, its perfection, and everything else. So this understanding will be there. Then the next one is also very important. So after understanding all this, you should not cling on to this karmically conditioned fire aggregate of form and mind so deludedly anymore. And the next time when you argue with your friend or your wife or your husband or your spouse, you will understand that it's just one form and mind arguing with another form and mind. So this form and mind is just this bundle of memories and its conditioning, views and opinion, etc., arguing with another form and mind of similar type. So not so real and not what you think. You will understand all this and you will not get yourself entangled in all those things anymore. You will not waste time on all these things anymore. Unless there is condition to help people, unless there is condition for certain thing to be done. Otherwise, this nature will just silent, doesn't do anything. Unless there is condition, nothing happens. So that nature will know, it will just echo and flow. So that is the uniqueness of the teaching of the Buddha. When you awaken, you can have all this understanding. Then I will read on. If you deludedly cling or grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind as the I and the me, then you will have what the Buddha calls self-delusion or sakkayaditti. Self-delusion or wrong view with regards to the self will condition your egoic mind, the personality, to arise, leading to all your selfishness and possessiveness, trying to own things, cling, grasp, and possess things, wanting things your way, etc., thereby arising the whole mess of suffering. So all this you will see very clearly. And because of that wisdom and understanding, you will never fall back again like before. The Buddha gave five good analogies to clearly explain the empty nature of the five aggregates of form and mind. He said our physical body or form aggregate is like a foam, appears so solid, but not so because if you leave the foam for a while, it's gone after a while. So this one, those who use soap to wash their clothing, they will know. If you put in a lot of detergent or soap, then you stir it up or agitate it up, then a lot of foam come out. Sometimes the foam are like build up like very solid. But you leave it there for a while, it starts to like disappear or sometimes blown away. And then not what you think. So this physical body appears so solid, but it's dependent originating, condition arising, cause like that form, except this one lasts longer. This one, it goes through the fall phase. Upon birth, it will go through the growth phase, where you become a small boy, a child, and reach puberty. Then you reach growth, where you plateau off. You cannot grow anymore. They say your growth hormone start to dissipate or become less and less. Then after that, you cannot grow anymore. What happened? You age, understand? You starts to deteriorate. Aging is the third phase. Then the fourth phase is death. That's why birth, growth, decay, and death. So this fourth phase, many phenomena exhibit them. So most people can see three: arise, sustainer, disappear. But as human being, as plant, you can see, you have a growth phase after you are born into the world. The physical body and the mind go through that growth phase. Then when you reach puberty, then when you reach the what they call a certain age, where you start to fully mature or fully grown, you cannot grow anymore. You grow hormone less already. Then you start to age, decay, then finally die. So now the doctor, they try to be like more smart. I wouldn't call them wise. You know what they do to prolong the physical body's life, to slow down the decay process. Maybe a giant town, you know. I got a few classmates who are doctors. One of them told me, is very good, he said, this growth hormone. Not cheap, no. Every jet, very small quantity. I think they charge vary from 500 ringgit to 2000 ringgit. And he did it for his parents to slow down the aging. But this growth hormone, it seems, can actually help your physical body to continue to grow even after your body cannot produce them. But don't go and do all this unless you really have a reliable doctor and through proper research, evidence-based or whatever, and then maybe you can go and find out and decide whether you want to try or not. But I don't want to try all these things. Your life for me is okay. But if people need, you have that confidence in the doctor or the faith, I mean, no harm trying. For me, I'm open. Okay? But personally, I have not tried. Yeah, and I don't think I will try all this. Yeah, for me, this physical body, if it can last me long enough to do my sharing, is okay. Anytime, you can just go. Not a problem at all. Yeah. But based on my health now, I think confidently, yeah, if nothing happened, should be able to hit about 70 plus to 80 easily. But then after that, I think no point. You live too long, also no point, because the physical actually will deteriorate very fast. But it depends on the condition. Maybe now medical science has improved, and I see a lot of people living up to 90 something. But most of them are not so healthy after they pass 80. Or 80 something, except our PM, the ex-PM. That one, 94, 95, still can become PM. Very strong. So this one is just for those who are interested. The growth hormone, because science has this technological development, and it can help in, I think, many ways. So like the pandemic, they try to develop vaccine, so not so easy. But who knows, maybe one day the breakthrough, they can cut short the vaccine discovery from the usual, don't know how many months, down to maybe weeks. Then the world will not have much problem with that COVID-19 pandemic anymore. But based on what we are having now, not easy. It may take a while. The earliest forecast is still September, if they are lucky. If the test on human continue to be successful without side effect, but not likely. They are not easy to, it seems, get hold of that vaccine. That vaccine must be a common denominator where all the strain of the COVID-19 virus can be like matched and captured, because they have mutated into so many strains. It's in China one different from US, US different from Europe, Europe different from all the other places. So not easy to track all this strain. Okay, we move on. And the feeling aggregate is like bubble. This is the second analogy of the fire aggregate. So your physical body is like a foam. Feeling is like bubble. What is bubble? Pop, gone. Pop, gone. So you check when you're mindful, your feeling arise and pass away, arise and pass away, very fast. But if you are mindful, aware, silent completely, then you can feel it. Feeling is just pure feeling. Before your mind stir, before you label it as like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant feeling, you must feel it. Then that sensation is just that sensation, without words, just that thing. That is meditation. Silent and be with it. Be with it. Whether you label as pain, numbness, or itchiness, or whatever, be with it. And then you start to understand. Feeling before it's conditioned into that is actually pure feeling. But because the bodily has its own condition, then it will become that type of sensation. Then through your conditioning, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, you label it as pain, numbness, itchiness, or whatever. Then sometimes pleasant feeling. So this feeling aggregate is like a bubble, is a very good analogy. Then the third one is the aggregate of perception is just like a mirage that you see in the desert. So when you perceive something, it's just a mental image, isn't it? Is it real? Not what you think. Because a lot of time the perception is false perception, wrong perception. Like that day, I think Brother Song described in the meditation. he perceived it like got mosquito around the leg. But then when she checked, no, don't have. Like in the early day, I remember I got this comic thing. When I meditate middle of the night, the initial, I think the initial period for a few nights. So when I was meditating, I get into this piti and sukha calmness very fast. Then after that, a few days later, when I meditate, before that piti and sukha come, my leg where I cross down there, suddenly I got a feeling, a perception, like a cockroach, you know, running around there. Because I wake up middle of the night, 12 something or something, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. to meditate during the early days. Then initially I thought, wait, what is all this? How come cockroach come to me? So what I did was I want to check whether it's cockroach or not. Because of the perception and the sense. Then I use my hand and check. I don't have. It's actually a false perception. Then suddenly from inside, the understanding came. This is my coming obstruction. I must have killed cockroach before. That's why now in the meditation, it come and like create coming obstruction. Then I recall when I was young, my mother, we always, because in the village, mosquito and cockroach, we will buy mortine or the rickzack or the noah. So I used to actually spray them when I was young. Then I realized all this action has its coming. Then once I know that it is the cockroach coming, I immediately ask for forgiveness because my nature know what to do. Then I seek forgiveness, everything. Then after I did that, sincerely repent, then vow not to repeat it again. Do you know what happened? The next day, it came again, that perception. So I confidently thought, it's not the real one. Then you know what happened? I put my hand down and check again. Three cockroaches down there. That was the time that time when I touched, I was so surprised, there was fear because of the cockroach. And that was the early years of my meditation. So all this comic thing, you don't play a fool. Then I realized, this is the friction of what I did, and I have to go through it with the understanding I overcome it. After that, no more. Until today, no more. Just imagine, that was early 80s, I think, during the 80s, 83 or 84 that time. So all this comic thing, you don't play a fool. That's why from personal experience, I came to know all this. Comic obstruction is very real. You cannot violate the precept. That's the reason why the Buddha say, sabbe papasa akarana, all evil you have to avoid. Not only avoid evil, all evil you have to avoid. So this is a very important understanding. So this part, maybe you all can also take note. So the mosquito part gone. So perception, the third aggregate I have explained. So the other explanation is like I explained to Jayanta that day. In a desert, when you are traveling or from far, you can see the mirage. It's like there's an oasis, a pool of water there. So it will give you the energy to walk. When you walk, by the time you reach there, you realize a mirage. There was no pool of water, no oasis, nothing. So that is what The analogy is the Buddha said it's like a mirage. So perception is a mental image, really like a mirage. Then the fourth aggregate is the best. This one is very powerful. The fourth aggregate is Sankara. Then the aggregate of Sankara or thinking or mental activity or mental states is like peeling a banana tree stem, layer after layer as you peel. Finally, at the core of it, there is nothing. It is empty. That is Sabbe Sankara Anicham, Sabbe Sankara Dukkham, Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. And you will straight away understand, because this is so beautiful. Sankara Anicham. Sankara is impermanent, it can't make hope. Then Sankara Dukkham, if you attach and cling, it leads to suffering. Then Sankara Anatta, empty concept, no reality. Towards the end, you peel and peel and peel, at the core of it, it's empty. So your thinking is the same. You think and think and think and think, end of the day, do you think it's anything tangible? You may be emotional and all those things, but whether you think, no different. Don't think, also no different. You may argue with me, but when I think, I develop some idea, my life changes. But end of the day, any different. When your breath stops, you cease to be. So what happened is what? Memory. Memory. No reality. Everything arise and pass away, arise and pass away, cease to be, cease to be. Empty nature existence. No reality. That's why I like that saying, the Mahayana Mandarin saying, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na mo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong lei. So this saying is very beautiful. I heard this when I was very young, primary school. I was seeing this swordsmanship show. The monk was chanting up there, I think, Tu Long Tao. Then the one, the Yifu, trapped by the three Shaolin monks, they were doing the chanting. Then he finally developed the Dhamma understanding, awakened. And what he heard was, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na mo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei. That phrase is very beautiful. The meaning is, when you are born into this world, when you come to this world, you come empty-handed, you don't bring along anything. Then when you die, when you pass away, you also pass away empty-handed. Then why do you grieve in between birth to death? Why do you grieve, suffer, become miserable and grieve in between? Over what? Emptiness. Namo si zu he bi ku ku wei kong liu lei. You grieve with your tears, misery, suffering, emotion, over what? Emptiness. Finally, there is nothing. He no you, he no me. Not what you think. The world is a world. Dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, empty, nonsense. Not what you think. Everything that your thought tell you is just words, idea, concept, mental activity, sankara. That's why this sankara, you must see it clearly. Empty nature of existence, no reality at all. Then the last one is the best, the Buddha said. The last one is consciousness. The fifth aggregate of consciousness or vijnana. He said, vijnana is just like a magician, a great magician. A magician is also called illusionist. One who creates illusion for you to see. Hence, the reason why the Mahayana always say that the world of ours is an illusionary world, a world of consciousness only. So not so real and not what you think. Do wake up and do not be deluded anymore. So now you know why the Buddha say consciousness is like a magician. Yeah. Do you know you are the greatest magician in the world? Yeah. Do you know how you create the world or not? You're seeing consciousness. Huh? The moment you open your eye, you created the vision of the world that you see. Do you realize that? You're the greatest magician. Creation starts with you. Appears so real. Everything is so solid, so real. Wait, the colors are more. Color, sight, and sound. You know. The music, the vibration, everything. The smell, the taste. Everything like arise already. Appear already, created. I like the seeing consciousness. I see it very clearly. Open the eye, creation, all exists, like very real. Close the eye, cease, gone. And you're the greatest magician. So all these are illusion. Mind make are they? Consciousness. That's like the phenomenal world of consciousness. The phenomenal world of for my mind. Is the phenomenal world of consciousness, not what you think. Without the mundane mind creating through consciousness, nothing exists. So all this is like a magician, an illusion, create illusion for you to see. That's why we call it the illusionary world. Ah, yeah. My daughter say like the virtual reality goggle, let her explain. The technology now can do it.
Yeah, now nowadays we have only sight and sound, virtual reality goggle where you can put on the goggle and then you will see if you want to be in a spa, you want to be anywhere, you will see and hear, and then it fools you into thinking you're there. But our senses is actually the most advanced virtual reality goggle. Yeah. It has smell, touch, sound, everything.
Then also that they that the music one, you remember? How many dimensions? Five dimensional one. From like distant sound, everything. Can go around and sense around everything. So that is virtual reality too. That's a technology also can create the effect. If our senses is capable of that. That's the reason why I always share with people during the early years after I have developed the understanding, when they discuss with me on certain aspect of life, leading to religion, philosophy, and all those things. Then I say, religion is not something very difficult to understand. It's not so mystical as what people think, or esoteric in its nature. In fact, it can be easily understood. That's it. First, we have to understand who are we, what are we, and how do we know the world? How do we interact with the world? If you understand this, you will understand who are you, what are you. First, how do you know the world? How do you know the world? Through what? Your senses, isn't it? Without your senses, you cannot know the world. So, you know the world through your senses. Your senses together with your consciousness created the mundane mind. So the mundane mind is the one that gives rise to the various types of consciousness. Seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. That's how everything becomes like real, alive, exists already. So this is how you know the world. Then how you interact with the world? Same. Through your senses. Through your consciousness. So consciousness has got two types. One type is the mundane mind. The other one is the inner nature. The inner awareness. The self nature. The true nature. So that's how you interact with the world. So understanding this is very important. Then you understand clearly who are you? What are you? Without the senses, you are nothing. Without the consciousness, you are also nothing. So inquiry is very profound, very deep, if you know how to inquire deeply, clearly. Yes, during the early years, I reflected and contemplated, then I came out with all this understanding myself. I asked myself, who am I? What am I? How do I know the world? How do I interact with the world? Then when I silent, I check, who am I? What am I? What is this consciousness all about? Then how it creates the mundane mind, how it creates the consciousness, how it arises all this phenomena, mental phenomena. Then how do I know the world? How do I interact with the world? I inquire, I find out, I went into it. And I check. Most of you don't even know who are you, what are you? How you become what you are, also you don't know. How you move, how you act, your brain and all those things. And the worst is, most people don't understand the mind. Not only the mundane mind. The nature, the consciousness. Hardly anybody understands. They talk about it, there is word. But what is that thing? Can you really, really investigate and understand them? That's why you don't have to believe anything. What is that? Who died? What died? You can know before the actual happening. All this is possible through meditation, through understanding that true mind, that nature, the awareness, that experiencing that cessation. Actually, no one died. It's just separation of the consciousness from the form. Then you say, death has occurred, the condition no more. So the condition that give rise to the segmented form and mind, you need to meditate, silence your mind to find out, to understand and to really develop the wisdom. Then you understand who are you, what are you. How do you know the world and how do you interact with the world. All these are very important understanding. That's why when you meditate, check. Who is meditating? Who are you, what are you, without thought. Who are you? What are you? Then the aggregates of mind. Are they real? Are they really you? If they are not you, then why do they arise in you? If they are you, then if they arise and pass away, did you die? You didn't die, so how can they be you? Perception, come and go, you didn't die. Feeling, come and go, you didn't die. So perception, come and go, you also didn't die. And consciousness arise and pass away, you also didn't die. So how can they be you? But if they are not you, then how come they arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? These are very deep inquiry. That's why during the early days, I reflected a lot, contemplate a lot. That's how I developed this understanding. Otherwise, how can I teach and share all this? No way. In fact, a lot of things that I developed the understanding of this form in mind, science don't know. Science never teach. The senses and all those things, the mundane mind, all those things. They have a lot of scientific subjects, like psychology, psychiatrists, and many other fields about the thought process, the emotion and all those things, mental problems, and even what they call the people with mental problem, what you call it, depressive people, OCD, obsessive and compulsive disorder. So now they created name for all these things. But if you develop the meditative mind, the meditative understanding, you can understand why people can become like that. Because of ignorance, delusion, the karmic conditioning, the fear, the phobia, the anxiety, the sorrow, the limit. Because they just deludedly grasp, cling and hold and become so badly afflicted. That's why the word affliction is really true. Misery, sorrow, lamentation, misery. So these are the understanding that can arise when you develop the meditative training to awaken. And the Buddha Dhamma is very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. Okay.